your tears on my pillow that won't dry on the road beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step,
step by step,
day by day, I'm on the run to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Good evening. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Fred. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away. And ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. If everybody's ready, let's start the meditation. Everybody can join me in the foglight prayer. If you don't know it, it's right up here. God, let your love shine through me. There's a solution from Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who have suffered from alcoholism. I've asked Brian to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this notice because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
Hi, my name is Brian. I'm a total alcoholic. Among a rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unexpected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others or talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so please set your phones to airplane or meeting mode, or just turn them off. So I don't have a jaw-dropping introduction, but I do know Joe is somebody who works with the Big Book and is someone who walks with God, and I'm excited to what he has to have for week three.
Thanks, Fred. Appreciate it. Oh. Hi, everybody. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name's Joe Bick. It's good to be here. It's good to see you guys here. Thanks for keeping that door open for me. I was listening to the gentleman read how it works, spiritual experience, and we read it every time at this meeting. And I've studied it because I had a teacher. I guess they say when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And I had a teacher that really covered every aspect of the book in the first 170 pages or so. And it says what he said, I don't know if a lot of times we'll hear something, but we don't actually know what it, we just pass over. It kind of like goes in and goes out, and we don't really pay attention to what it says. But for those of you that are new here tonight, or perhaps you're just coming back after, several attempts at this thing and struggles and, just nightmarish experiences of trying to stay stopped, not get stopped. We all do that. That's easy to do. You can slap a cop and get stopped. We're talking about staying stopped or being relieved of the alcoholism, right? Because if we're not relieved of the alcoholism, we will continue to start again. But it says what often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. I don't know if you're going through that traumatic path, that traumatic experience of self-discipline. Right? But when they say what could be accomplished in a few months, they're talking about the step process of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're talking about coming to grips with what we have, coming to grips with what the solution is, and making a very, very important decision that will affect the rest of your life to move forward in the process that they've laid out that often takes place in a few months. I don't know if you ever heard that or looked at that and asked yourself what that means to you, but it's very simple. What most of us go through is years of self-discipline, self-reliance, trying to figure this thing out. Picking and choosing our way through. Desperately trying to have it our own way. Disbelieving some things, accepting others. Being very rigid and defiant in our attitude toward what is something that may be extremely valuable to us, but because of our upbringing and society and that, you know, the people, maybe the circles we hang in, they say that's not the way to go. I don't know. You know, it's like a two-door. I don't know if you remember Let's Make a Deal, Monty Hall. Anybody remember him? Monty Hall? Two or three? Are you kidding me? Good God. So I'm speaking to a young crowd. Well, Let's Make a Deal is still on there, but when they get to the big deal, they have doors up there. There's like door number one, door number two, door number three. Right? Well, in this deal, in this arena, in what we do here, when you've been afflicted with alcoholism and addiction, there's two doors that face you every day. Right? One is to do what often takes place in a few months, could take place in a few months. And there's people out there that say 6 months, a year. I say, you know, find somebody that's urgent. Not a runaway train, but urgent. Every day we're not doing this, we're rolling the dice. Let's just roll the dice. Let's just see if I can stay sober on yesterday's sobriety. Let's just see if I can stay sober and grow on yesterday's progress. It doesn't happen that way, right? So door number one is establish and experience a life beyond your fondest imagination. In other words, one that you can't imagine. One that you can't see, can't feel, have never experienced before, right? This profound alteration in your reaction to life. This worldview completely changes. Your whole come from changes. Your whole appreciation for certain things change. The diminishment of the things that we find here on earth that are so damn important, that drive our mind, dominate our thinking. Money, property, prestige, fame, fortune, popularity, looking good, being understood, all this garbage that really means nothing in the pursuit of life. Door number one. I know everybody comes in wanting door number one. I did. And then the other door is death. Going through life, day in and day out, hanging in there. Right? How you doing? I'm hanging in there. How's life? Okay. Living in a life of scarcity, mediocrity, negativity, boredom, and uselessness. Struggle. I didn't get sober for that. Door number one, life. Door number two, death. You know what the alcoholic and drug addict does? Well, how long I got to think about that, man? I don't know. Really? What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. Every single person in this room knows that struggle. Knows that struggle of trying to do this in a fashion that suits them. This is not how this works. See, we're getting up to a decision in three where you're ready to leave your decision-making behind. I guess because it's been working so well, right? That's what my sponsor said to me. He says, well, Joe, he says, look, he says, you know, I understand that that's important to you, and I understand that's important to you, and I understand that's important to you, but the importance you're placing on those things create domination in your mind. It means that you're emotionally fixated on it where you can't address other things that might be valuable, that might save your life. You're saying this is more important than this. Door number one is not as important as door number two. I want to have door number one, but I want to be able to bring some two into it. And all it does is contaminate it. Let's see how well I've done with all my ability to talent, skills, strength, devotion in the realm of course, recovery. Never could stay stopped. Intimate relationships, authentic relationships, being an authentic human being, being somebody that can be fully self-expressed and not care about what you think about it. Wow. You see, I used to be addicted to those things. I used to be consumed at what you thought of me. I was always posturing and performing and masquerading so that you would just think I was somebody. Because I felt like such a freaking nobody. I hated me. And the reason I hated me wasn't because you hated me. I hated me because I had to act to have you like me. Good God. What a sellout of the soul. Think about what we've been given on earth. We're the most majestic beings on the face of the planet. Every single one of us are a creative masterpiece by a God who adores us. And we just doo-doo on that, for lack of a different word, all day long, every day, because I'm not good enough for you. My God. I know everybody in here, when they hear that, would only dream about becoming the individual that God created them to be the most magnificent person on the face of the planet with your name. Because we're all masterpieces. We just covered up with so much garbage and so much entrenchment and addiction to the world, because that's what's going to satisfy me. If they like me, that's what's going to satisfy me. If they think I'm a good looking guy, that's what's going to say. If she likes me, that's what's going to satisfy me. If I have a Mercedes Benz, you know what? Maybe they'll look at me and think I'm, you know, like a Mercedes Benz guy. What? No, really. Really. We spend so much time, effort, and money on consuming things that we hope other people will identify as who we are. In other words, we spend so much time, effort, and money trying to get things and bring them into our life rather than just the majestic, magnificent masterpiece that God created me to be. We bring all this other garbage in so that we can be defined by that. This isn't just about not drinking and drugging. This is about becoming the authentic you that you were created to be. We got a perfect program to provide that. Do you know there's people in recovery that have been here for 20, 35, 40 years that have never established that? They just don't drink. They go to meetings. They're in the fellowship, and God, they're loved in the fellowship. A man walk out of the fellowship, and they're it's all about. It's like a fight. It's like a struggle. See, we already know what we've been afflicted with. You got to know this too, that we have been given an affliction of addiction to alcohol or whatever thing that is, whatever it is you do. To achieve the gift that he laid out for us. It's by our affliction that we're saved. It's by our affliction that we're placed into AA. To be given a chance to be reborn into somebody different. Caterpillar to the butterfly. To come in one way and emerge a completely different way. So that when somebody in the back of the room, shaking like a $2 outboard, broken to pieces, wanting to take themselves out, they can look at you and go, holy God, I wish I was like that. I wish I could say things and do things that I really feel and I'm committed to and not worry about what people think of me. See, it's maniacal. It's crazy. But you know, 3/4, 4/4, I mean, almost 90% of the planet thinks like that. Look at society. Look at the way we advertise. Live a good life. Come to the Seminole Casino. Like, that's what it's going to take me to live a good life. You're nothing unless you own a Lexus. It has us look at ourselves in a way that it cheapens us. Why do I say all this? Because most of us suffer from this type of emotional malady. And malady is just another word for sickness. So our affliction says what? Says, well, as far as, you know, I'm drinking and drugging for a reason. Dr. Silkworth said it was ease and comfort. You bet. When I started feeling less than, less adequate, inadequate, just not quite good enough, just not quite okay enough to be who I really was or say what I really wanted to say because I think I'd be judged for it and this and that and the other. I wanted somebody to look at me the way I wanted them to look at me. Right? I have to really come to grips with some things. There's a reason that I put drugs and alcohol into my body. And there's reasons and consequences and prices that I pay that have me get stopped, right? I mean, most of us are at the point where we have to be stopped, be separated. You can't wake up and just say, well, you know, I just think I'm not going to do that today. What? Do you know why? Because of all the years that culminate in a place where we harbor nothing but shame and regret, loneliness and despair, fear, bitterness, anger, guilt, feeling like we're never going to be forgiven, feeling like we're never going to recover, feeling like people are looking at us and judging us. We're always having to perform. We're always having to sell out on ourselves. We can't tell people, that's not okay to do by me, because they might not like me. Do you know what the worst part about harboring all that is? Walking around like it's not, doesn't exist, right? That is called the internal condition of addiction and alcoholism. The results of our past. Well, guess what? That will take you out whether you're drinking or not. There's people that have committed suicide in AA all the time, put a gun in their mouth or lay on the railroad tracks, that can't take what's going on the inside. They don't drink, they don't drug. But they can't live with themselves. They can't live with themselves. Dr. Silkworth says we drink and drug because we like the sense of ease and comfort that comes in a split second by taking a drink or a drug. See, if we're walking around with untreated alcoholism, we're walking around harboring all those things, the only thing our mind is screaming for is relief. You know, we're pretending to everybody else how good we are and how, you know, we got it going on and this and that and the other. And you know what? They may be buying it. But we still got to lay our head on our pillow at night and know they're giving it to a fraud, a masquerade, a phony. And we hate ourselves more. What are we to do? That's a no-win situation, people. When that stuff gets on the inside, you can't get it out. I don't care if you put down drugs and alcohol 6 months ago, it's still running you. You're still looking for ways to satisfy you and feel ease and comfort. You may not be drinking and drugging, but you may be going to the casino. You may be going here. You may be going there. You may be trying so hard to be popular, so hard to be liked, so hard to look good. And in that process, you're controlling. You're trying to control everything so that you get the proper response. He says that once we succumb to the desire or the obsession, the lie, the internal condition is so combustible and so full of conflict and chaos that all of a sudden, it's not doing it. She's not doing it. That didn't do it. The money's not doing it. See, if I'm walking around with untreated alcoholism and I haven't made this decision to seek and validate it by doing it, the world's still running me. And there's only one thing that's going to kill that pain. Want to know why you keep retoxing or relapsing? That's why. It's not because of what's happening at the present. It's because of what's going on in the inside. And if we don't address it, it's going to take us down. It always will. So AA says, here's a solution. Here's a solution to all your problems. If you're asking, well, what do I have to do? It says, well, that's exactly what this book is all about. It's not just 500 meetings a week. Meetings are important. This is a meeting. It's a great meeting. Thank God for Mike Chase that put a meeting together where you can speak freely and openly about the solution. I do it anyway, so does Peter. We don't care. The book tells us not to apologize to anybody for talking about our God. Right? So, the solution is a spiritual solution. The point is that we work out this thing on a spiritual plane. Right? Cornerstone is simply this. See, if you're here new and you're in the beginning stages, and you're hearing a lot of talk about God and the solution and steps and all this other stuff, step two says, yes, there is a solution. We're going to seek a power greater than ourselves. They kind of backdoor you in there. Now, they don't give them the name yet. We give the name back on page 45. We give God his name on 45. But in order to have us understand the magnitude of what is going to happen, door number one is to rely on self-reliance. Door number one is to remain powerless. Door number two is to continue to seek the person in the mirror for all your ills and to recover, right? Door number two is to at least acknowledge that no human power has been able to relieve you of this mania, this inability to stay stopped, or if you will, your alcoholism. B, right? In order to stay stopped, we must be relieved of the alcoholism. Notice it doesn't say, in order to be relieved, we must stop drinking. Of course you got to stop drinking. Any idiot can figure that out. They're talking about the disease of alcoholism. They're talking about the internal condition. They're talking about the pursuit of life that is taking us down every single time. And no matter how hard we try, we fail. Right? They say that all we need in step two, given the fact that this is a solution to find a power greater than myself that will solve my problems, is that I only have to be willing to believe. Willing to believe. Well, what would make me willing to believe? Well, hell, I'm dying. I can't stand me. I want to take me out. I feel like in the middle of 80,000 people in a stadium, I'm completely alone, the bone-crushing loneliness. People are judging me and it's deafening and they're not even thinking about me. You know what I'm saying? They say, so if you're willing to believe, or if you can say now that you believe, there are believers that come into AA, yet they don't have a relationship with God, but they still believe. But if you can say, I do believe, or I'm at least willing to believe in this power greater than myself, I'll read it to you. Well, it's one of the greatest promises we have. But you don't get it for nothing. You know how we are, always wanting something for nothing. Well, can I just get it by hanging out, going to the meeting? No. No, there's some directions that must be taken. Oh, the cornerstone is how it works. I'll get to that. But listen to this. So if we're willing to believe, if we believe or are at least willing to believe based on evidence, based on the fact that no human power has been able to keep me stopped, including that idiot in the mirror that's been trying forever, right? That, if I can get my hands wrapped around that, that I'm going nowhere extremely fast, why wouldn't I at least consider being willing to believe that a relationship with this power is possible for me? God, I see it all over the place. Everybody's talking about it, and I feel like I'm from another planet. I don't feel that. Well, of course you don't, because you haven't done the work to feel that, right? So it says this, it says, bear with me. No pun intended. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself. There's people in this room right now that can acknowledge this to themselves and actually do step two. If you're clear about not being able to stay stopped when you start and not being able to stop starting. If you got that, you got the allergy and the obsession. You're clear on that. You're suffering from the disease of alcoholism. It's a fatal disease, right? Now it's just simply acknowledging that I'm going to seek this power. It says, do I now believe or am I even willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, key for those that are agnostic and perhaps even atheist, right? We emphatically assure him that he's on his way. We emphatically assure you that you're on your way. That's all you got to do. You got to say, okay, I've never had this thing with God. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of millennials that never even get introduced to that aspect, that thing. But you have evidence of what alcoholism and drug addiction is doing to you. It's killing all your friends. You've survived to this point. Why wouldn't you be willing? Because of how I was brought up in religion and all this other garbage that I'm using as an argument, as my evidence to justify it? Right, great. Door number one or two, right? As soon as a man or woman can say that they do believe, or at least willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that you are on your way. Oh my God. It says this, it says it has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. The spiritual structure they're alluding to is this arch that we're going to build through the step work. Through the work. We got to work to build it, right? They say that the cornerstone, and by the way, once you erect this arch and put the necessary pieces in place, you will walk a free man and woman. Free. Free of the internal condition. Free of the addiction to alcohol or drugs. When faced with calamity, your mind will go, man, what it did to me, and recoil like a hot flame. If you don't bother to build the arch, you'll always go, man, remember what it did for me? God, I need relief. I need ease. I need comfort. And you'll cave. They say nobody's ever won single-handed combat when that obsession strikes you. And we know it's true. We know it's true. We have evidence, right? So the cornerstone, being willing to believe, is this first stone we put in place on the foundation of certainty that I am truly an alcoholic and addict, can't manage my own life, can't manage my own thinking. See, when they say manage my life, it's manage my thinking. And that no human power has been able to relieve me of that alcoholism or drug addiction or keep me stopped. Thus, the foundation of certainty and honesty, right? Honesty and hope. Here we go. We're gonna seek even further now, right? They say, oh my God, this is crazy. For anybody that hasn't had this happen, hasn't had this experience, you're thinking, that's I don't want to say the word, but you know, I know what you're thinking. Because I used to think the same thing. How could that be? How could that be possible? To me, it was an impossibility. Well, of course, because it's a supernatural occurrence. That's all. I mean, it is what it is. Right? They say that, I'm going to read it. When therefore we were approached by those with whom the problem had been solved, in other words, had erected this arch by doing the step work and walking through it, a free person, there was nothing left for us to do but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. Bill used the word tools. Same word means steps. The simple steps laid at our feet. I mean, what is it, like $10 now? $11, right? It says this once you've done this. We have found much of heaven and have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Could you imagine that? There's some of you in here that go, what could that possibly mean? Freedom. complete freedom. You could go to jail for an old charge and be incarcerated and free. Not only that, but you'll go willingly to clean up the wreckage of the past so you don't have it following you around. That's boldness. That's confidence. That's grace. That's mercy. The great fact is this, and just nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life. Old attitudes, ideas, and beliefs, appetites, desires have been cast off to one side, and a whole new set of principles, attitudes, and ideas begin to dominate that individual. They say that we have this constitution within us, this set of rules and guidelines and principles by which we govern our life. Well, when we get here, our constitution is filled with vanity, greed, lust, entitlement, ego, pride, defensiveness, all those things. The constitution of selfishness and self-centeredness to the core. Only making sure that what I do on a daily basis, I'm satisfied. At least that's my attempt. That's my pursuit. That's our constitution when we get here. Right? This, we take those things and we build a brand new constitution. Where we come in habitual liars, we start to be honest and truthful. Right? Discarding the old, bringing in the new. This game, this thing is a game of detraction. We take it out. We go through this deconstruct, and then we reconstruct with God's help and the help of our sponsors. Right? We incorporate these spiritual principles into our life to let those guide us moving forward. Right? Says, our whole attitude towards life, toward our fellow, and towards God's universe has been revolutionized. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. How could that be? Well, if you want to know, you got to go. You got to build the arch. You got to do the work, right? What a wonderful thing it is to feel completely safe and protected, completely intimate in awe of your God. Know that you're protected no matter what. Know that He will lead you anywhere at any time and protect you. And that whatever you're confronted with, you can overcome it. Think about what we come in here feeling. Why wouldn't you? Where could an argument be for that? There's only one thing that's going to beat the argument out of us. Booze and drugs. That's it. They say it'll beat us so unmercifully, it'll beat us into a state of reasonableness where we become teachable. Where we will say, I don't know how to obtain this, certainly. But we've got to acknowledge certain other truths in our lives, some other facts in our life, that I've never been able to be consistent with this thing. I've never been able to have intimate, authentic, empowering relationships. I've created nothing but destruction and despair. If I died tomorrow, what would my funeral be like? If I was given the opportunity after I passed away to know what it would be like lying in my casket and actually seeing what's going on at my funeral, who'd be there? What would they be feeling? Would there even be anybody there? Where would they bury me? What would they be acknowledging me for? Pain, despair, anger, rage, abandonment, distrust. We hurt people. We hurt people. Or would they be saying, oh my God, my life was so positively changed by having known that person. That my life has never been the same and has been only on an upward and more positive trajectory for having known them? Or would there be weeping and bitterness? What's your legacy? What's your legacy going to be, Joe? John asked me that in 2002. I said, what are you talking about? Well, I don't even have any money. I thought legacy meant what you leave behind that people can have in tangible results. He said, no, your legacy is what you leave behind in the minds and hearts of people that have crossed your path. Will it be empowering and awesome, or will it be devastating and despairing? We have an opportunity in here to begin a brand new legacy. If you're here tonight and you're just starting out, you're restarting, you have the opportunity to literally create a new past and come to closure with the old one. My God, why would I be willing to leave? That's a pretty good reason. They say you might not have overcome drinking if you don't. Well, that's a good reason too, right? We agnostics is probably one of the most magnificent chapters I've ever read in my life. I mean, I was a believer coming in here. It's not like I didn't believe. It's not like I didn't believe that God was God and that I was me and my family was, you know, such and such a religion. And, you know, we went to church and we did this thing. And I went to parochial school. I went to parochial high school. I went to, you know, I was educated on religion and God. It's not like I didn't know that God was God. And I never disbelieved that God was God. I never disbelieved that he was creator. I never disbelieved that. But I never, ever made an attempt to pursue a relationship with him as if it would be important. My relationship came through the immediate gratification of the world. Do you follow me? Money, stuff, prestige, fame, applause, recognition, popularity. That was it. I thought that was what was going to make me happy because I made up that that's what made people happy that had it when I was a kid growing up. Well, of course that's what's important. High position, whatever. If you thought of me like, you know, I had arrived, then I'd think of me as if I had arrived. Like, if you thought of me as a good person, I'd think of me as a good person. In other words, I said, okay, God, great, you're God, blah, blah, blah. But they're going to determine this human being's value. And it cut me to pieces. Because you never gave me what I wanted. And when you did, I was gaming you anyway. And I knew it. So who was I? Somebody asked me that question one time. They said, who are you, Joe? In front of 40 people, they asked me that question. I said, well, my name's Joe Bear. I was born in West Palm Beach. I'm, you know, such and such years old. No, man. I didn't ask you for your vital statistics. Who are you? I don't know what to say. I was mortified. What do you say to that if you don't know who you are? You don't know what you stand for. You don't know whose you are or nothing. I couldn't say I'm a kind-hearted person. I'm kind and considerate. I'm committed to life. I love people and I feel like I love serving people. I feel like I have integrity and responsibility and dignity and high self-worth and high self-esteem. I had none of it. I didn't even know what that was. I was too busy playing somebody else so you'd think that way. Wow. Wow. I didn't know any of this until I got in this thing. I knew none of this. And I know I'm reaching people's core right now. It hurts to hide. It hurts to be counterfeit. It hurts to be disconnected. They say I've got to clear this channel so that I can access God's love and power. so that I can feel it and absolutely know he's true. Until I do that, he's just a concept, a theory. He may be good for you, but he's not good for me. Well, what's it covered up with? What's it been choked off with? What is the sunlight of the Spirit as they describe it, this channel, this access, been closed off by? My addiction to the world and what I think is going to make me happy. Everything. There's only one thing that will get between me and him and sever that connection immediately. It's only one thing. It's just the world. That's all. Just the whole freaking world. Through this process, I begin to let go of that. Through this process, I begin to find things that are way more important and way more truthful and way more core building than that. Even though when I make a sincere decision, sincere and earnest decision to seek him, when I make a decision to put him in charge of my life, make him my father, make him my director, make him my boss, make him my comforter, my protector, my everything, which is what this says to do in here in step 3. I take this idiot out of the picture. See, if I'm dying from alcoholism and addiction and I can't stand my life anymore, and I want something new, then I'm ready to make that decision. Even if I don't get to that point, you can still make this decision and do the work and have the results. I'm just acknowledging how broken I am and how broken I was. You see, I'm still broken. I'm still terribly broken. And in such need of his mercy and love and grace. You see, mercy is not getting what I do deserve. Grace is getting what I don't deserve. So when I put him in charge, when I make him what they say is the keystone, the center stone that holds both sides of the arch together, Bill put it way better than I could possibly put it. Says this is how and why, but first of all, I had to quit playing God. You see, I had to get off the throne. I had to let God assume his powerful place. And I had to assume my role in this deal. Right? Says I had to quit playing God. It didn't work, obviously. I mean, you know, y'all got evidence. Everybody's got their own little 25-mile-high pile of evidence dragging behind them. Says next, that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. See, they're asking us to come to a place right here after this information, after the first 4 chapters, to declare something, to commit to something, to engage in something. And, you know, arguments be what they are. Either I'm going to choose door number 1 or I'm going to do number 2. What, you know, there's no door number 3, right? Says he's the principal, we are his agents. He's the father, we're his child. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. Third step goes like this. God, and I'm gonna comment in through it. It says, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou will. Have your way with me. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. For me, it's just so that I can do thy will. Because if I'm not relieved of my selfishness, then I'm not doing his will at all. I'm doing my own will. Take away my difficulties. By the way, when it says take away my difficulties, that doesn't mean my wage per hour that I'm not happy with. My lack of the car that I want that I'm not happy with. My situation, my home situation. My any situation, anything out here That's not the difficulty they're talking about. Right? We've usually destroyed most of that stuff anyway. It says, relieve me of the bondage of them, better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those that would help with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. Now, what's going to help me reflect his power, his love, and his way of life when I'm not a frickin' habitual liar? When I'm not a thief looking to gain everything I can from you? When I'm not a predator on your emotions and your life just so you can validate me? When I'm not driven by ego? When I'm not resulting with pride and being defensive to anything anybody says about me? When I'm not incredibly greedy that I'm out there stealing or taking shortcuts or manipulating or lying to people to make money? When I'm not lazy? When I'm not gluttonous? You see, if he takes away or at least relieves me or gives me a reprieve over these defects because I'm really trying to grow into the image and likeness of him and walk in his direction with a new constitution, let that be witness to those that would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. So only... What it sounds to me like? It sounds to me like, let me become the man that goes around telling everybody about the God of my understanding, shouting it from the rooftops without uttering a word. Who are you being? Right? Now, there's a lot of things you can decide to do. But I say this, if you're anything like me, all my decisions in life were nothing more than nauseating intentions. It's just the truth. Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'll never do that again. You know. Yeah, I'm going to go to New York. Yeah, I'm going to go to California. Yeah, I'm going to get out of Florida. Yeah, I'm going to go to the store. Yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I made all these decisions, but I never carried through on most of them. Right? Same thing here. If you're making a decision to turn your will, which is your thoughts, right, which is a snapshot of your life, and your life, your actions, over to God's care, what would care be? Care would be the further development of this man becoming the man that God created me to be by the step work. You see, this has been given to us divinely. This has been instilled in Bill to put down on paper for us to have a relationship with him. Why would we have any program on paper in a book on earth that didn't point in his direction that wasn't about him? Man normally points man in man's way. Right? If you're going to do this, you have to make a decision. We're at the point of a decision that's going to affect our entire lives. The rest of our entire life, and have a big impact on the people in our life, right? And it's going to have a huge impact on the people that you've never met, that God is going to send down your path that has a similar story and a similar path to you, where you can lead them out of darkness to the light. It's that simple. But if you make that decision, let me tell you what's going to happen. It's either going to be a nice intention or you're going to validate the decision. Because see, the book says this, and it makes perfect sense and would make even more sense if you actually make the decision and follow the dictates of this book. So it says, so once having done this and we abandon ourselves utterly to him, next. Now, wait a minute. What's that mean? That's the timeline here. So once we've done that, once we've done this third step prayer, we made the decision, I'm going this way. I'm going door number two here. Right? It says next. That means now. It means next. We launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is the personal house cleaning. See, all we've been doing is conceding some things to our innermost self that were absolute, that we're alcoholic, couldn't manage our own life, that no human power could relieve our alcoholism, B, and C, that God couldn't would if he were sought. Well, how do you seek? Well, it says you make a decision and then you take the action behind it. It says this. It's the first step, step four, which many of us never attempted. We were always looking at everybody else's problems as a result of our problems, right? Though our decision, that means our third step decision, was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect. It could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort. Listen to this. To face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Blocking us from what? From God's grace and power and love. We had to get down to some, we had to do some surgery here. We had to find out who we were addicted to and what we were addicted to. Who you got when I showed up on the scene. What game was I playing? What masquerade was I running in all my relationships, right? So it's therefore we started upon a personal inventory. So listen, a lot of people come in, they even have stories and more about alcoholism. Jim and, you know, Fred and, you know, listen, when these guys knew they'd lose everything if they went back out there. They knew what they stood to lose. They had people come from AA and tell them what the problem was, right? They admitted they had the problem. And they would tell them what the solution is. And they knew that if they kept on going the way they were going, they were going to lose everything again. Just like us. And based on that, we make a beginning. The beginning we take, we go to AA, we go to some meetings. We don't do this yet. So we fail to enlarge upon our spiritual life. You see, if we come in and we do what we think is one and two, and we know we're an alcoholic, and we know that there's no human solution, and we know that it's a power greater than ourselves, and we make a decision to stay, we'll still get drunk. You understand that? Anybody ever do 1, 2, 3 drunk? I have. All my life. It's because I never validated the decision. See, if you validate the decision, you do a 4-step right now. If you're in, you got a pen and a paper. You got a 4-step inventory template form, and you're going to work. Right? If I decide to go to California and I come back next week, tell y'all I didn't go, nice intention. So if you want this thing and you make a decision to seek earnestly, you're immediately going into a 4-step inventory. We'll talk about that next week.
Let's thank Joe one more time. And then we're going to have Heather up for our secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Heather, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Kat to come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Cat alcoholic?
Yeah.
Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. Okay. If we are cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for a lifetime. We have been restored to sanity. That was the problem, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
In 1940s style big book sponsorship from forward to the second edition Alcoholics Anonymous, of alcoholics who really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone needing a sponsor? Please stand. All right, guys, let's get him back to God. Please join us Monday nights. We have a big book study meeting here where the big book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the big book study starts at 7:15. We have some announcements for anyone that is wanting to get involved. We have the Victory Annual Picnic. It is the longest going picnic here in South Florida. It's free. Supposedly it's going to be a lot of fun. You can bring your kids, but not your dog. We have the 40th Big Book Seminar. Joe and Charlie, really awesome. If you've never done a Big Book Seminar, you should definitely go and check it out. We also have, it's going to be Mother's Day weekend, we have the Fellowship of the Spirit. Mickey and Marie are going to be flying in from Denver, Colorado. Mike Chase has tickets in the back, and also you can go online. The address is over there. Mickey is AA, and Marie is going to be Al-Anon. And then we have the Florida State Convention coming up. It's going to be in August, so you still have some time. If you want to get involved, there's a lot of service. It takes like an army to get one of those things to go down. But we have the Jersey Shore Roundup in November, and that's about it. So we also have CDs, mugs, large print big books, the Little Red Book, and big book dictionaries for sale. We meet here every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
All right, we have tonight's session and all past speaker podcasts online at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night big book study. And those who wish, it's on the same building. When you come in the doors, walk left up third floor. And those who wish to thank the speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father. Glad everyone came tonight. I'll see you next Monday or Thursday. Godspeed. No smoking or vaping 75 feet from the door, please.
Heart is heavy. Shoulders thirsty. Body's aching.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine. shine.